extremely difficult piece of Gemara. That's the truth. It's an extremely difficult piece of Gemara because it's very cryptic. It's a tough piece of Gemara. So, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to be delving into the whole profundity and depth, and the simple reading of this Gemara leaves many, many questions. The Rishonim spend a lot of time explaining this Gemara, and there are numerous different readings of the Gemara itself. Where are we? Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. So I'm just going to give you that preface before we start off. The Gemara we're learning tonight, we're going to learn it on a relatively simple level, just straightforward, just the bare bones, the bare necessity of the Gemara. I think that even if we're not going to understand the full depth of this Gemara, it will still provide us with a new appreciation in the idea and ideals of what's going on at the beginning of the Seder, especially in light of the various classes that we've had. So the Gemara bases itself on the words of the Mishnah. And the words of the Mishnah were, we spoke about the fact that after Kiddush, before we went into the second cup, the first thing that we do is we're going to be bringing these vegetables to the table. And in doing so, we said the reason that we bring these vegetables to the table is in order to engage the children so that they'll see something odd is going on. This will provoke questions, and when they will ask questions, then in turn there'll be some kind of a give and take, which is necessary for the mitzvah of Vigadat Levincha. It's required for the mitzvah of the questions that are asked and the responses that are given. So the Gemara the Mishnah didn't spell out the fact that there's different vegetables over here. We know this from the later iterations of things that are discussed in the Gemara. We know that it's not the same vegetables. It's not bringing the Mara twice. We call this karpas, and people bring celery or potatoes and onions or various other things that are brought. But the Mishnah also entertains the possibility of there being nothing other than Mur on the table. All they have is chazeres. All they have is this romaine lettuce. And because all they have is this romaine lettuce, so, what do we do? How do we run the Seder if, in fact, we don't have all of these different, let's say, attention-grabbing things, things that are going to provoke the and pique the curiosity of the children? So the answer was, we're going to take the mur, we're going to dip it once, and then later on in the Seder, we're going to take the mur, we're going to dip it again. In other words, we're going to go through the same motions. We do it twice. The first time we're doing it is in order to pique curiosity so that we can provoke a question. So because if the children ask a question, that we can respond and fulfill the mitzvah of Vigadat Levincha. And if you remember last week's class, we talked about a range of shittas from the extreme shita of the Rosh, who says that if the children didn't ask, there's not even a biblical mitzvah to answer. It's only a rabbinical mitzvah. So we try to have a biblical mitzvah. Or according to the other Rishonim, that even if it's going to be a biblical mitzvah, if we in turn are going to speak about the Exodus on the night of the Seder, but ideally we should do it in the manner that the Torah tells us. It was ki yisholcha bincha. The children ask, we respond. So what do you do if there's only maror? I mean, we the Jewish people have celebrated Passovers under tremendous angst. Times when we didn't have all of the different kinds, and we didn't live in the kind of plenty that we are fortunate enough to enjoy today. So the Gemara said, "Well, if all you have is that chazeret, then you dip it twice." That's the Mishnah said. So the Gemara says, "Omer Reish Lakish." Reish Lakish said, "Aha! So you're telling me that we can use the same vegetable, which is maror, which is bitter herbs. You're telling me we can do that twice." Ah, said Reish Lakish. If so, Zayse Meres, then this says to us, in addition to the fact that it tells us how to run a Seder, in addition to the fact that it's telling us what we should do with regard to the mannerisms that will get the children to ask a question, this tells us something else. This tells us that mitzvahs tzriches kavona, that mitzvahs have to be performed intentfully. So what does that mean? What does it mean this tells us the mitzvahs have to be performed intentfully? What it means is like this. Let me tell you what it doesn't mean. It does not mean that a mitzvah has to be done with fervor and mindfulness and thoughtfulness, or you don't get a mitzvah. No, that's not what it means. That's the way mitzvahs should be done. we should be investing heart, mind, and soul in the performance of a mitzvah. We should daven with kavana. We should do a mitzvah with kavana. Yeah, that's nice. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about here the awareness that a mitzvah is being performed. In other words, if a person eats maror without knowing that it's maror, did they still fulfill the mitzvah? And you're so sure? The Gemara is not sure. So here's the question. You have this agnostic person at the table. You're supposed to include him. Even the Ben Arosha. He says, I'm not eating that. Are you kidding? Forget about it. Say, yeah, don't do mitzvahs. That's okay, fine. But actually, we're serving salad now. You don't even tell him it's murder. You just take the romaine lettuce and you cut it up. And he's like, this is salad? I said, please don't offend my cooking. All right, fine. Whatever. I'm not saying anything. I don't want to offend the cook. And he eats the salad. He's eating romaine lettuce drizzled with horseradish. He says, this is an awful salad. And then he finishes eating the salad and you say, ha, you did a mitzvah. He says, oh, I didn't mean to do a mitzvah. I wasn't thinking. I said, I know, it's okay. That's the question. What if you found a Jewish man and he was hungry and he said, don't mitzvah me, but I'm hungry. He said, oh, you're hungry? Fine, here, have some crackers to eat. And he eats matzah and he's really hungry, so he eats all the matzah in the right amount of time. Does he actually have the mitzvah of matzah, or does the person have to know, tonight is Pesach, this is matzah, I'm a Jew, and I'm supposed to do this? I don't know why, I'm not really interested in it, but if that's what I'm supposed to do, that's what I'll do. That's a question. The Gemara has debated this at length and elsewhere. And the Gemara here is now going to introduce Reish Lakish. When Reish Lakish read this Mishnah, everybody heard Pesach. Everybody heard Seder. Everybody heard an ingenious way to engage the children so we can do this mitzvah. But Reish Lakish's mind worked differently. He's hearing a Mishnah about Pesach, and he says, ah, unbelievable. So the rabbis who taught this Mishnah, what they believed was that mitzvahs, tzrichas kavana, the mitzvahs have to be done with the intention to fulfill a mitzvah. Not a lot of intention, not a lot of mindfulness, but the intention to fulfill a mitzvah. How would he know that? He says, because if they ate the maror twice, if they got the mitzvah the first time around, what's the point of eating it again? If they dip the same vegetable twice, then for heaven's sake, what do you have to do it a second time for? So we'll say, well, the first time it wasn't done for the sake of maror. The first time it was done for the sake of, quite literally, curiosity's sake. The children's curiosity. That's why it was done. And the second time it was done for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah. So because the first time it was done for curiosity's sake, and the second time it's done for bitter herbs, maror, mitzvah's sake, so that's why there's a difference between dipping it once and dipping it a second time. But here, it's clear that the mitzvah, because there was no intention to fulfill a mitzvah, he didn't do it. Because otherwise, what's the point of eating maror again? Mitzvah's done already. Nobody loves maror. It's done. He ate the bitter herbs. Do you understand what Reish Lakish is saying? Yes? That's like a brilliant observation. And it's totally iconoclastic, because it's not what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah is talking about the Passover Seder. But Reish Lakish's legal analysis, his legal mind says, one second, no. This is revealing. This Mishnah tells us much more than the Passover Seder. This Mishnah is telling us something very, very different. Ah. Mitzvahs. Tzrichas kavana. So that's how Reish Lakish looks at this Mishnah, and he says, because kevan deloy beidan chiyuva demarer hu deachalei, because the first time around, it was not being eaten for the purpose of maror, of bitter herbs, beboire pri ha'adama hu da'achalei, it was eaten for the purpose of making a boire pri adama, which was eaten just for the purpose of getting the kids to say, hey, why is this night different than all others? Here we are, we made kiddush, we went to wash, no bread, no food. We're getting a nibble, a nash, a vegetable, an onion, a parsley. What's going on over here? So the first time you ate it was for boire pri adama. The second time you ate it was for what reason? for the reason of maror. And therefore, since the first time it wasn't eaten for the purpose of maror, he actually did not fulfill the mitzvah of maror. That's Rish Lakish's supposition. So the Gemara says, "Vidilma leichavin lemaror," and perhaps he didn't have in mind the eating of maror, and because he didn't have in mind the eating of maror, so boy lemahader laatbuli l'shem maror. Now he has to dip a second time, which we can understand not as dip, but now he has to eat a second time in order to fulfill the mitzvah of maror. I have a friend who once met somebody who didn't want to put on tefillin. He refused to put on tefillin. An old man. So finally he said, they changed the conversation. They said, by the way, can I just see something about the size of this tefillin, if you don't mind? He took the old man, he put his tefillin on and said, you make it straight. Excellent. Thank you very much. You've been a great help to me. He never told the guy to put on tefillin. Would it work? We don't know. Maybe. So if maybe is good enough. It doesn't mean that it worked. It's certainly not the ideal way. The ideal way would be to say, no, this is a mitzvah and you should be doing a mitzvah. You don't want to do the mitzvah? Fine. Do me a favor. But at least he knows it's a mitzvah. Doing you a favor for a mitzvah is not a beautiful way to do a mitzvah, but it's still doing a mitzvah. Not doing a mitzvah at all means doing a favor saying, I would mean a lot to me if you put on tefillin. Guy says, I don't care. I'm not interested. It doesn't do anything for me. He says, okay, it would mean a lot to me. Could you do it for me, please? Do it for me. So if it makes you feel good, I'll do it for you. He's a nice guy. But I have no interest in doing this mitzvah. That's without a question a mitzvah. But here, he has said, you know, just wear this on your head. Wear this on my head? What do you want me to do that for? What do you care? I need to try the size. So he's not thinking about a mitzvah altogether. It's very possible there is no mitzvah then. This is exactly what the question is. And Rish Lakish is trying to demonstrate in this Mishnah that in fact, mitzvahs would tzrichas kavana, would need intention, and therefore in such a situation, there would be no mitzvah.
And if the intention is for me?
No. If the intention is for me to do a, he's doing a mitzvah, he's doing me a favor, that's not an issue, not a problem. That's not what it means. That's why I said in the beginning, it's not about kavana and intention and passion and fervor, and that's not what this is about. The question here is, do I have to know I'm doing a mitzvah? That's it. Do I have to have in mind a mitzvah? Not that I want to or don't want to do the mitzvah, but factually speaking, I'm doing the mitzvah. So here, let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Zaysimedes mitzvah sichas kavana, mishum hachi boi trei tibuli. That's why we need the double dipping. Why do we have to double dip? Because the first time was not intentful. The first time I didn't think about maror. I wasn't thinking of bitter herbs. The first time I was thinking, I got to get their attention. Once I get their attention, maybe they'll ask a question. And once they ask a question, then maybe we can get the Seder going the way it's supposed to be. Shemalei niskaven l'shem maror. Because we say, maybe he didn't have in mind maror. Hoyilu beirog beir pri adamo. He made a Borei Pri Adama. He didn't make a bracha asher kedishanu b'mitzvot avos yivanu le'echol. Al achilat maror. Since he didn't make a bracha al achilat maror, he only make a bracha Borei Pri Adama. So in that case, forget it. He clearly didn't have in mind kishar yirakis, the alma. It was just like eating regular vegetables. So the Gemara says, in its, so to speak, comeback, the Gemara, what's the answer? The Rish Lakish made a very, very serious allegation, if you will, a supposition, and we have to now respond to this. Is the Rish Lakish's supposition correct? Is this in fact true? So the Gemara says no. One second. The Isalke Daitach. Because if you're going to think Shemitzvah, that mitzvah loy boy kavana, mitzvahs don't need intention. So if mitzvahs don't need intention, lomalei terei tibuli, why do we have to have the two dipping? V'ha tovalei chada zimna. He already dipped it once, and since tovalei chada zimna dipped it once, so therefore that's it. You can make the camera straight, because it drives me crazy, that's crooked. That's not you. Nothing. Let's put crooked. Straighter. Straighter. So the Gemara now seeks to deflect this supposition. And the Gemara says, Dilma La'ilo mitzvahs ein tzichas kavana. Perhaps, in truth, mitzvahs do not require intent. Udekamrit. But you have a question. Your question was, today tibuli lomali. Why do I need the two dippings? If mitzvahs don't require intent. If mitzvahs require intent, I know why I need to dip a second time or eat a second time, because the first time there was no intention of filling a mitzvah. The first time I wasn't even thinking about maror, I was thinking about vegetable. It's only the second time I started thinking about maror. But if, in fact, mitzvahs don't need intention, so what's the difference? I did make a bracha al achilat maror. I didn't make a bracha al achilat maror. I ate maror. It's done. So the Gemara says, ki hechi de lahava hekeda litinoikis. Why are we eating it the second time? I'll tell you why we're eating it the second time. Because we want the children to see tonight is different. Because they want to keep provoking questions. In other words, the supposition was that if we are dipping only once, the children don't notice that. If we dip twice, the children notice. And that's the language of the Manashtana. Manashtana halayla hazeh shebuchol halaylats ein anu matbilim afilu pa'amachas. Halayla hazeh shtei pa'amin. And we could see if things are set up for a double dip. And because we're set up for a double dip, that's why we have the questions. So here we came along and said, one second. The Mishnah, in its original approach, was find another vegetable. That's what we need now. We need a vegetable to dip. We need to eat less than a kazayit, even though that itself is a big machlekes of Rishonim. Some Rishonim say dafka should eat a kazayit. But let's say follow the way the final iteration of this way, the Alter Rebbe rolls it out of Shulchan Aruch. We eat less than a kazayis. Eating less than a kazayis, we have in mind make a bracha bar preadoma. We have in mind a mar that's going to be eaten later. We don't recite an after blessing because we didn't eat a kazayis, and it's not considered a hefsek because it's one big seder. So since one big seder, this is one continuous engagement and involvement that we're doing. Okay. So, but if mitzvahs need intention, it makes sense that I should have to eat the maror a second time, because the first time I ate the maror was only for the purpose of curiosity's sake. So I didn't need it for. I wasn't thinking maror. And Sif, I wasn't thinking maror. So the mitzvah didn't have kavana. The mitzvah didn't have kavana. Now I know why you have to go ahead and eat it a second time, because you didn't do the mitzvah yet. That was the Reish Lakish supposition. The Gemara said, no, 1 second. Let's say a mitzvah works even if there was no kavanah, no intention whatsoever. Let's say, no intention whatsoever. However, the reason I have to eat it a second time, even though I presumably did the mitzvah already, it's not for the mitzvah. I'm eating it a second time to keep provoking curiosity. Keep the kids up. So, here we go again. Didn't we just do this? Why are we dipping things again? Funny you should ask. Now let's talk. In other words, the very fact that the assumption was the first time would be for curiosity's sake, the second time is for points, because otherwise it was done already. And the Gemara says, maybe the second time is also for curiosity's sake. Maybe the first time could have ended up being for points, but because here you don't have a second vegetable, so you'll dip twice. The second dipping will be later, or the unusual dipping, or the provoking of curiosity will happen again later instead of just the first time. Like, why can't that be? In other words, you really can't prove anything from the words of Reish Lakish's analysis is inconclusive. It's a supposition. It's an interesting suggestion. It does not tell us that the rabbis of the Mishnah necessarily held that way. So the Mishnah, Gemara comes back now and says the following. V'chi tema. And if you would say, what is the Gemara trying to do now? The Gemara is trying to go back and buttress Reish Lakish's argument. So v'chi tema, and if you'll say, im kein, if so, if that was the case, if it was the case that the second time that we're eating, that we're dipping is just in order to create curiosity, so in that case, lishme'inan b'shar yirokes, then the Tana could have told us about a second dipping with other kinds of vegetables. So the Gemara says, "Iyash me'inan b'sha'ar yirakos." If you're going to start making a supposition of other vegetables, hava mina, then I would say, "Hecha de'ika sha'ar yirakos, hu de'be'inan treiti buli." When you have other vegetables, that's when you dip twice. But when you don't have other vegetables, that you don't dip twice. Ava chazeres lechudei, if all you have is the maror. So this is what the what if seder, not the lechatchila seder, what if. Oh, well, if you don't have two vegetables, then you only dip once. You don't dip twice. So kamash malon, from here we could see, the Gemara cannot tell us only the example of having two vegetables. The Gemara has to tell us the example of having even chazeres to teach you the afilu chazeres, that even if all you have is but chazeres, nonetheless, be'inon terei tibuli, we still have to have dipping, have to do dipping twice. Why? Ki hecha de lahavaba hakeda litinekis. Because it's so important for children to be curious and so important for children to ask questions that despite it all, we still have to do this. And therefore, if it's not a perfect situation, if we don't have the additional vegetables, well, we'll still dip twice. Because it's not just about performing the technical mitzvahs of consumption, which is maror and matzah, but rather tonight there's an issue of education, of getting a message across, and we have to go to extraordinary lengths, even doing things which are, on the surface, totally unnecessary, like you eating the same maror twice, if that's the way we can get a question out of the kids.
What if there's no kids at the Seder?
What if there's no kids at the Seder? That's an excellent question. So actually, the Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch, halachically, I'm emphasizing says in Shulchan Aruch because it's not just a theory. He says that if there's no kids at the table, then the adults should ask each other. Because at least then there's a give and take. The point is, monologues are the worst kind of educational experience, especially at 11 o'clock at night. It's like a guarantee. Everybody's sleeping, you know, and old Uncle Sidney is reading the Haggadah. It doesn't work. So therefore, we have to engage everybody around the table. And therefore, if somebody's going to ask and somebody's going to answer, we're still doing weird stuff. I know you asked these questions last year. I know we kind of remember doing this last year, but the fact that we're still doing unusual things, that's number one. Number two, we can't have 16 different kinds of Seder. Seder for a baby. Seder for a child who knows how to ask certain questions. Seder for children who are a little wiser. Seder for no children. Seder for children who are angry. Seder for children when you're yourself. Seder for children when, you know, like, a Seder is a Seder. We have to have one Seder, and everybody does the Seder to the best of their ability. Otherwise, it just doesn't add up then. At the end of the day, we have this concept in Torah called Loi Plug. We can't make distinctions. We have to stick to like a one size fits all. Otherwise, everything goes the other way. So everything gets confused. And is it really necessary? Is it really important? Well, last year we didn't do it. Oh, last year was a different kind of Seder. Who's going to know that? I was at this home. There was a very rabbi. They didn't ask any questions over there. Oh, I guess we don't have to ask questions. No, but you realize there wasn't any children there. So people in their mind, everything gets confused. So therefore, just keep it simple. And so the Gemara has come to explain to us why all of this is being done but for curiosity's sake. And ultimately, the double dipping, or the fact that it's dipped a second time, is in no way, can be really construed as proof that mitzvahs tzriches or ein tzriches kavan. So the Gemara now says, V'oi Tanya, the Gemara asks further on the Shlokesh, and is going to try to prove from the Braisa that mitzvahs don't have to have intention. V'oi Tanya, we learned, Acholon demai, Yotza. Acholon b'loi miskaven, Yotza. Acholon lachatzoyin, Yotza. Okay, the three different cases. So let me fill you in now. The land of Israel is a holy place because the land of Israel is holy. The produce that Israel produces is also holy. There's mitzvahs attached to it. As such, we are taught that once a harvest is brought in, the first thing that has to be done is we separate a portion and we give that to the Kohanim. That's approximately 2%. And that is called Truma. After giving the Truma, then we take 10% of what's left. So let's say, in theory, you have yourself your bushel or of 98 pieces, of 100 pieces, two are given to the Kohen, you have 98 pieces left. We will give 10% to the Levi. So that's 9 point something. 9 point something goes to the Levi. The Levi has to separate 10% of what he got and give it to the Kohen. And then we return to the actual harvest, and we have to separate an additional 10%. And depending on which year of the Shemitah it is, that 10% will go either to Yerushalayim to be eaten in holiness and celebrating the city of Yerushalayim, or the 10% will go to the poor people. So the name of these different kinds is, the first is called Truma, the second is called Miser. The spin-off of Miser, which means 10, comes to the word Eser, 10%, is 10% of that 10%, so that's called Trumas Miser. After Trumas Miser comes either Miser Sheni or Miser Oni. And these are the four things that have to be done on a regular basis. All right, so during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the rabbis are getting wind of the fact that people are not so scrupulous about the observance of these mitzvahs. So much so that during the time of the famous Kohen Gadol Yochanan, the Beth Din dispatches a commission, a Miser and Truma commission, to find out what the story is. Are people or aren't people giving Truma and Miser? And here's what they came back with. They said most people give Truma. Truma, there, it's a big deal. It's 2% also. They give that to the Kohen. They know that that's sacred food and so on and so forth. The 10% they're supposed to give to the Levi, they're not really doing it. Number one, the 10% that goes to the Levi is not really sacred. Mind you, it has some sacred 10% mixed in, but people don't tend to think that way. Number two, most of the Levites didn't come back in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, so it wasn't even being done in the biblically ordained manner. We were giving the extra 10% to the Kohenim as well. And because of this, a lot of people were lenient with themselves. They said, like, you know, Truma will give, but Miser, that's already too much. The extra 10%, you know, you're talking about people giving away their hard-earned crops. They don't want to do it. So now we have a situation where we more or less know for a fact that any time you're buying fruits and vegetables in Israel, for the first time in history, we don't know if it is or isn't kosher. We don't know. We don't know what to do now. So the rabbis created a new class of food. And the class of food is called demai. Demai means do mai. What is this? You know what it is? It's do mai. What does do mai mean? It means maybe it's good, maybe it's not. And this is rabbinically prohibited from eating unless you take a certain amount of miser. At least the trumas miser should be separated so that it should now be mitukan or fixed and can be consumed. So this is, it's a rabbinic idea. It's not only a question of maybe the truma wasn't given. It goes further. Now that the rabbis prohibited it, it's prohibited across the boards, even if in fact you were eating something, which somebody did give truma and trumas miser, which most of the Jewish people did. There was a majority, but enough of left was left of the question. So even if people did do that, even if they did, nonetheless, we're still left with this rabbinic edict that we should not eat that food unless we take truma or miser, despite the fact that it may have been done already. And therefore, if somebody does take the truma or miser, what did he effectively do? He effectively violated the rabbinic edict. Now, the rabbis made this injunction in a limited way. They said if a person is poor, a person can't put bread on his table, and he asks a fellow Jew, please, could you help me? I don't have any money. And the guy says, fine, have some food. Feed your kids. And the poor guy is like, oh my God, how am I feeding my kids? I got this small amount of food, these few morsels, and now I have to take off more miser. I can't feed the kids. So they said, you know what? If you're poor, it's okay. Poor people can eat demai. This was a rich man's edict, not a poor man's edict. And that's the way the Chachamim set it up. They set it up that this would be effective only for those who were able to afford it. There's such a concept. It's a mitzvah that's binding. If you can afford it, then this is binding. If you're in a poor situation, you can't. So now, what happens if a person were to eat maror? He uses demai. That's what he uses. Does he fulfill the mitzvah of maror? Or do we say that since he violated and ignored the rabbinic edict, no, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of maror altogether? That's the question. So the Gemara says, we learned in a braisa, that if you ate the maror from an am ha'aretz, from a simple person, from a person who was unlettered and spiritually uncultured and probably didn't or may well not have taken the proper tithes. So what happens is, if you ate it in a state of demai, so the halacha is, you still fulfill the mitzvah, yotza. Why did you still fulfill the mitzvah? The answer is that in truth, even a person who's wealthy can be in a situation of impoverishment. How so? How so? What if I have a lot of money? How could I instantaneously be in an impoverished situation? The answer is, I make my residuals ownerless. If I renounce that which I own, theoretically, I'm now poor. And in fact, the Gemara says that if a rich person is traveling, and he doesn't have any cash with him, and doesn't have traveler's checks, and doesn't have a credit card, we never had none of these things once upon a time, and he's starving, he doesn't have any food. Can he eat a poor person's food? Can he eat ma'aser ani? Can he eat what's given out to the poor person? And the answer is, right now he's in need. He is actually in need. So if he's actually now in need, he can mentally renounce all of his possessions, and then he actually becomes a poor person. And that works. So because there's always the possibility of being in a situation where demai could be eaten, because the prohibition of demai is not across the board, it's not an absolute prohibition. Because it's not an absolute prohibition, if a person were to eat the maror, even if the maror is demai maror, even if it comes from this vegetable, this produce, which has been intrinsically, let's say, modified or put into a separate class by the sages, nonetheless, you would still fulfill the mitzvah yotza. And then the Braisa goes on to say, Acholon b'lei miskaven, you ate it without having any intention to fulfill a mitzvah. Says the Braisa, yotza. You fulfill the mitzvah. You're telling me, Reish Lakish said, you have to eat the maror with intention of eating the maror. I'm showing you a Braisa, the Braisa that precedes the Shlokesh, the Braisa from the time of the Mishnah. And it says clearly, Yotza, you fulfill the mitzvah. Achol lachtsoin. Lachtsoin means eat half of it. So we learned many times that in order to fulfill a mitzvah, when it's a mitzvah of consumption, you have to eat a serving. How much is a serving? An ounce. So you have to eat an ounce of it. After you eat an ounce of it, that's when you fulfill the mitzvah. Okay. So what happens if you eat half an ounce? You don't do the mitzvah. What happens if I eat half an ounce? And then I get involved with some other stuff. But I come back and eat another half an ounce, or I eat little bits at a time. Would I still fulfill the mitzvah? So the halacha is yotza. I would still fulfill the mitzvah. Of course, I would have to eat it within a certain frame. If I don't do it within a certain frame of time, I actually won't fulfill the mitzvah. But if I ate a little bit, and then 2 minutes later, ate a little more. And then 2 minutes later, ate a little more. And together, within the time of Bechdei Achilas Pras, which is the amount of time which is called a sitting, eating half a loaf, within the amount of time of eating a half a loaf, which is much more than just an ounce, but within that time, I actually did, in the end, eat the full ounce, yotza. Is it ideal? No. How should you eat your maror? Eat up your spinach. That's how. Just do what you got to do. Now you're doing a mitzvah, eat your maror and finished. But what if a person ate maror, got up, walked around the table, had some more, nibbled some more maror, walked around the table, nibbled some more maror, walked around the table, but in the end ate the maror within that frame of time, the halacha would still be, you fulfilled the mitzvah. Uvilvad, says the Gemara, but as long, shalo yisha ben achila lechavrta, that he didn't wait between one consumption and the other, yaser mechde achilas pras. He didn't wait more than the amount, let's say 9 minutes, 6 minutes, 9 minutes. There's different sheets, there's different opinions. He didn't wait longer than that. So yotza. So here we have a situation where we have three exceptional realities, not the way it should be done. Number one, he's eating demai. What are you eating demai for? You shouldn't eat demai. You should be eating peiros mitukanim. You should be eating fruits and vegetables. You should have on your table things which are without any question eaten the way an observant Jew should be eating it. And after the sages made that injunction in the second Beis HaMikdash, the right thing to do is not have demai maror, but to have real good maror, maror which is taken, tithed, and with no without any questions. Here's the story. That's what happened. That's what happened. That's what we call bidyavid. It happened. It was done. Did they fulfill the mitzvah? And the second example, b'lei miskavet, having no intention. They thought they were eating salad. And then they found that it was maror they were eating. They never had an intention of doing a mitzvah. They thought they were eating a nibble here, a nibble there. All the nibbling together ultimately adds up to a sitting and to eating a shir. So we say in all these cases, you still fulfill the mitzvah. So you're telling me now that a shlokish is arguing with a braisa? The braisa says, if you ate it mindlessly, you do fulfill a mitzvah. Bidyevet. And Rish Lakish says, oh, our Mishnah is effectively telling us that you don't have to do a mitzvah mindlessly. Pardon me, you do have to do a mitzvah mindlessly. So the Gemara comes along. This is a very strong question against Rish Lakish. This is a question which seems, Rish Lakish seems to be saying, he's reading into a Mishnah, but contradicting a Braisa, which is of the same genre of the Mishnah. How could you do that? So the Gemara comes back and says, well, Rish Lakish is not actually wrong. The Gemara says, the truth is, Tanoihi. The truth is, this is a machlokes that precedes Rish Lakish. This is a machlokes. It's an early dispute, a dispute that's much earlier that goes back to the time of the Mishnah sages. So it's not a problem if one Mishnah reads one way and another Braisa reads another way, because it's possible that one Braisa follows one school of thought and another Mishnah follows a different school of thought. And whose opinion is this? The opinion that Rabbi Yosi Lakish seems to follow is Rabbi Yosi Omer. Rabbi Yosi says, "Af al pi shetibel b'chazeres, even though it was dipped of the chazeres, nonetheless, mitzvah lahavi lefanov chazeres v'charoses v'shnei tavshilin. Even though they didn't have the parsley, they didn't have the celery or even an onion, and therefore they ate the lettuce." And they ate lettuce once, and now they eat lettuce a second time. Rabbi Yosi says, mitzvah lahavi lefanav. It's a mitzvah to bring it before him anyway. Bring it in. Chazeres, charoses, shnei tafshilin. So the Gemara says, va'akati mimai. So now, what are we proving? Dilma kasavar, maybe Rabbi Yosi says, which doesn't mean Rabbi Yosi holds the mitzvah sichas kavana. Maybe the same way we answered earlier in the Gemara, this is all being done. To bring out curiosity. Maybe curiosity is being provoked here too. Maybe that's all Rabbi Yosi is saying. Dilma, kasava Rabbi Yosi, mitzvah and tzichas kavana. Maybe Rabbi Yosi says mitzvahs don't need kavana. And in truth, he did fulfill the mitzvah of Mara. Ay, debinon, teiti buli. The fact that he have to dip it a second time. Kehecha de tehevi hakedol tenekes. So that it should be strange for the children. So the Gemara answers back, but Rabbi Yosi said the word mitzvah. He says, even though you brought chazeres, mitzvah lahavi lefanav. It's a mitzvah to bring it. So the fact that Rabbi Yosi's iteration of this halacha is not that you should bring the mora for a second dipping, but it's a mitzvah to bring the mora for a second dipping. So it's not just to make the children curious. It's not just to get them to ask questions. From Rabbi Yosi's words, mitzvah lahavi, we understand that it actually is a mitzvah the second time. And so, in the end, Rabbi Yosi clearly is of the opinion that mitzvahs, tzriches, kavana. Mitzvahs have to be done intentfully. And because the mitzvah wasn't done with the intention of murder the first time, rather only to provoke curiosity, the second time, it is a mitzvah. That's when you fulfill the mitzvah of actual mara. And because that's when you fulfill the mitzvah of mara, that does definitively prove that Rabbi Yosi would have looked at the previous consumption and said, it wasn't a mitzvah. Why not? Because it wasn't done intentfully. So the upshot is, we don't have an answer to our question. Rish Lakish thought, he stumbled upon an answer. He says, finally, we have resolution to this question that has rocked the walls of the Beis HaMedrash for centuries. We finally have an answer. The Mishnah in Psachim, it gave us the answer. And the Gemara says, after careful analysis of Rabbi Shlokesh, we do not have an answer. In fact, all we have is the same argument that has rocked the walls of the Beis HaMedrash. It's still rocking. It's same question. Whatever argument there was previously, we have the same argument here as well. And therefore, we cannot prove anything one way or the other. Well, the upshot is, we should think about what we're doing at the Seder. We shouldn't do things mindlessly, because maybe mitzvahs do need kavana. And when we do things mindfully, then the mitzvah, then we can open the door to doing a mitzvah properly, which is heart, mind, and soul. And the more we invest of ourselves in the mitzvah, the more we're able to reap from the mitzvah, and the more meaningful and impactful the mitzvah is in the world in which we live, and doing our mitzvahs one at a time, every single one of them, hastens the coming of Mashiach and brings us into the situation of true redemption. B'mehedra u'b'yameinu. Amen.